Good Sunday morning and welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. It's a little bit chilly out there. I'll say a piece in four, but it's dry. And we're in the middle of the Tulip Festival. If you haven't had an opportunity to get down and view the tulips somewhere around town, there's still time before they lose all their blooms. Today we're going to deal with the National Famine Commemoration that is getting underway both at Groseal and in Skibbereen. And we will be talking to the Irish Ambassador, Ambassador Kelly, shortly. And then we will be going over to Skibbereen to talk to Terry Carney at a little after the 8:30 commercial break. But before we get into that, I do want to fill you in on some of the things that are coming up here on the Gaelic Hour and in Ottawa. This programme is brought to you in part by the general sponsorship and contributions that we receive from the Irish Village Group of Companies and also from the Monterey Inn Resort. We're indeed very grateful. And I have a request here from the Embassy of Ireland, and that is 2009 celebrates the 70th anniversary of the establishment of the Irish Embassy in Ottawa. And they're hoping to have a commemoration later in the year, but they're a little bit scarce on memorabilia. And they'd like, if anybody has any photographs or things that may be of interest, that they could forward them to the embassy so as that they can have somewhat of an exhibition on covering the history of the exhibition here in Ottawa. Well, some of the other things, of course, the Gaels have their golf coming up, and that is on the 23rd, and that takes place at Irish Hills Golf Course. And they want to raise some money to send the youth to the CYC, which is a youth competition in San Francisco. 23rd, registration 11, shotgun start 12 noon, prime roast, rib roast, dinner following. And you can put four balls in, and the you can enter individually, and they'll organize you. Number there for Kerry Beeching is 613-324-2348. And when I look down as well, of course, the usual events are going on in that on Tuesdays. The seniors get together at 11 to 2 over at Margaret Mary's, St. Margaret Mary's Church at Sunnyside in Fairburn. And on Monday evenings, there's an Irish session down at the Heart and Crown. And that's under the auspices of Cultus Cultori Éireann. And of course, there's a pancake breakfast this morning, even though it's Mother's Day, by the way. Happy Mother's Day to all you wonderful mothers out there. So if you... if you're out there and you're wondering where to do, what to do, where to go or what to do on this Mother's Day, you could always head out to the Monterey Inn Resort. There's a dinner out there tonight with some dancing, etc. And that's a good place to go. And I have a few other things I need to list here as I flick through my notes. I mentioned the pancake breakfast. On the 14th, CD launch, Sweet Melodies. And that's Alexander's all-time band. And that's... Frank Cassidy and Dennis Alexander and some others. And that will take place at the Old Dubliner in the Byward Market at 8 p.m. So come on down. And I see on Saturday the Ottawa Gaels, and Sunday they're down at a tournament which is taking place in Montreal. So they're getting their season underway. And I also want to, as I said, we're going to deal with the national famine. Just make sure I have everything else covered off. I want to tell you, of course, about the Rose of Tralee. Rose of Tralee Gala Ball is going to take on place on May 31st, and that is where Ottawa, for the first time ever, will be sending a girl to Tralee, and she will represent Ottawa in the 50th Rose of Tralee pageant that takes place there. And dinner, with the doors open around 5:45. There's a dinner and music and dancing, and then at around 7 o'clock, Michael O'Byrne will act as MC to introduce the girls and to select the girls, and the winning girl will be announced, and she gets to win a trip to Ireland, a 10-day trip to Ireland, where she will be one of the roses from all over the world. And out of that, in August, the Rose of Tralee is selected. But what we'll do before we talk to Ambassador Kelly, we will listen to Belfast Andy and his piece of music from a CD called Groseal.
The winds were bite, east of Quebec lie the children of the Gael, embraced and tear forever where the sea breeze softly wails. 3,000 miles from hell to here, another 20 still, to the fading view of the promised land from the graveyard on Rose Hill. To the memory of the thousands now, the sorrowful lives they gave, in search of their last fate home, instead they found a grave. They fled their beloved native land, bid Erin's soil farewell, crammed and moored the coffin ship's depths, their mad at dead set sail, forced out against an angry swell by John Bull's gloating face. Please remember this till the end of time, as England's damned disgrace. To the memory of the thousands, the sorrowful life they gave, in search of their last great hope, instead they found a grave.
Belfast Andy from his CD All That Glitters with a piece called Gross Eel, and telling in song, as the Irish are well to do, some of the history that happened and some of the pain that was experienced. excuse me. Ambassador Kelly, welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Good morning, Austin. How are you today?
I'm very well indeed, and I know you're down getting ready to go over to Gross Eel for the celebrations.
That's right. As we speak now, I'm in Quebec City, and in about a half an hour's time, we're going to leave for a little place called Berthier-sur-Mer, where we will take the boat about 45 minutes over to Gros Isle. And the wee this morning is myself and Minister Eamon O'Queeve and his wife Anya and his some of his colleagues from Ireland. He's the minister in charge of rural affairs in the Gaeltacht. And he's representing the government today at a very special celebration on Gros Isle.
Now, before we talk about Gros Isle, I know that the minister arrived over towards the a little earlier in the week and was involved in a series of celebrations in Toronto.
That's right. I should just, for the benefit of the listeners, explain that the government decided last year that the famine would be commemorated from now on, once in Ireland and once abroad. It was a small ceremony in Dublin last year. So this year, next weekend, it's Skibbereen, where there's a cemetery with 10,000 people buried in it. It's going to be the first Irish commemoration. Gros Isle here in North America, in Canada. But yesterday, in fact, we were in Toronto, and in the beautiful new Ireland Park Memorial, the minister had a very nice ceremony yesterday morning. So in other words, we're at one end of this great St. Lawrence Seaway yesterday, and today we'll be in Gros Isle. And I mean, Gros Isle's significance for your listeners, I'm sure a lot of the Irish know, but one fact jumps out at me. Outside of Ireland, the largest number of Irish people buried in one place is on Gros Isle. Over 5,500 people buried in a mass grave, basically, on the island. So it, of course, has been designated since the early 90s as Gros Isle, the Irish Isle, and is now a formal monument in Canada, tended to by Parks Canada, tended to very well, I have to say. So the federal government would be represented on the island today by Minister Jim Prentice and James Rajot, the chairman of the Canada-Ireland Parliamentary Friendship Group. So it is quite an occasion.
Now, when you get over onto Gros Isle itself, I know the other great tremendous feature that is there is that there is the largest Celtic cross, as I understand it, probably is it in the world?
It is indeed. I was just going to come to that. This is the 100th anniversary of the erection of the Celtic cross. It is 40 feet high, and it has inscriptions in the base in Irish, English, and French. Was erected by the ancient order of Hibernians to commemorate the events that took place on the island in 1847. To just give your listeners some facts and figures, they are truly startling. In May 1847, when the season began, in other words, the ice was gone, the ships started to come from Ireland, Black 47, the terrible year of the famine. 100,000 people left Ireland and England, but mostly from Ireland, from ports like Limerick, from Dublin, from Cork, from Sligo. And in all, over 440 ships brought 100,000 people. Some 19,000 of them died. Thousands are buried at sea, died at sea. Some of them died just off waiting to come onto the quarantine island. And 5,500 died on the island. And then because typhus, they didn't understand the disease, they didn't realize its incubation period. As the ships began to move up the St. Lawrence, people began to die because even though they were cleared by the medical authorities, they in fact were incubating the disease. So Irish people are buried all the way along Partridge Island, Montreal, further on up into Kingston, and then of course into Toronto itself, where Ireland Park commemorates those who died there. So the significance of this in our history is huge. But as I also say to people here in Canada, my Canadian friends, this is the history of Canada. It is, of course, the Irish history, the history of Ireland, but it's the history of Canada. Because even though there was tragedy here, so many of these people went on to become the people who built Canada and made it the great country that it is today. So in other words, there's triumph as well as tragedy here today. But the real significance of this, I should say, is that we are getting increasing awareness and recognition of the significance of Gros Isle in the history of Canada.
Ambassador, when you say that the people didn't understand the illness, etc., I know there was a movie that was released earlier in the year that was quite graphic, Death or Canada, and while it covered the journey of a family to ultimately into Toronto, the conditions that were depicted in the ships certainly helped illustrate how much the Irish had to go through, and it's a miracle that even as many survived as did.
Look, Alston, you just cannot understand until you really read about it. And it was graphically done in the film Death or Canada. The conditions were horrendous, horrific, any word you want to describe. The journey was often 6 to 8 weeks. Don't forget, when they got on those ships, they were already in bad shape, a lot of them. It was heart-wrenching. Some of the relatives were left on the docks. As illustrated in the film, some children were separated because they had signs of the disease, and especially in ports like Limerick, where they had strong medical checks, the children were put aside. So can you imagine that, any of our listeners today, having to get on a ship and leave one of your children behind, because it was either that or all the family would die. And as the film illustrated, on that particular family, they all eventually did die except the mother, which was truly heartbreaking. So they're on these ships. They're appalling conditions, actually beyond description. It is hard to get your head around how awful the conditions must have been. Don't forget, they arrived here in the middle of a very hot Canadian summer. They didn't have any of the clothes. They didn't have any air conditioning. They didn't have any of the modern things we have. And indeed, it makes me think today, because I do a lot of travel in my business, and, you know, you can sometimes get irritated if a plane is a half an hour late or your luggage doesn't arrive. And I often reflect on what these people went through, and, you know, really, in the 21st century, we truly don't have anything to complain about.
And to that end, like, you're correct insofar as a half an hour and we're getting itchy feet. And I remember talking to Dr. Michael Keneally there about 2 years ago at this time, and he said, you know, that there were up to 40 ships, possibly more even, tied up waiting to dock and for the people on those ships to be processed at Gros Isle. So not only had they come across the ocean and arrived in up the St. Lawrence, but they then had to sit out in the river and wait, because Gros Isle was only capable of accommodating a certain number of people.
Well, that's right. The medical authorities on the island, they did a heroic job, but the normal arrivals prior to that, Gros Isle was opened in 1832 as a quarantine station. Prior to that, the maximum arrivals in any one year was about 30,000. And suddenly, between May and October, they were hit in 1847 with 100,000. Not alone had the numbers trebled, but the conditions of those 100,000 were considerably worse than any of the previous years. So it was a double whammy, if you like. But this is where the heroes emerge as well. The medical authorities, the Protestant clergy, nuns and priests, the Anglican clergy did a heroic job, and in many cases they paid the ultimate price, because this is a tremendously infectious disease, and many of those caregivers, in fact, died themselves and are buried on the island. The island itself, for people who haven't been there, I really recommend it. It is a place, I've been there twice, you get feel an extraordinary sense of calm when you're on the island, and you realize that this beautiful island in the beautiful Gulf of St. Lawrence is the final resting place for these people who suffered so much torment in the previous 5 years in that awful voyage across, and in their final hours of death on the island. But when you look at the white crosses, the magnificent glass wall, which has every one of their names on it, which was erected by the Canadian government and opened by President McAleese in 1997, you realize that there is a sense of peace and final rest for these people on the island. And I must say, on the two occasions when I was there, when I left it, I did feel a great sense of peace myself, and a wonderful sense of that at least on this island I had finally found peace from the travails of this world. So I really recommend anybody who hasn't been there. It's a wonderful thing to do for Irish people, and indeed for Canadians, of course. And what we need to do is to really get the word out about Gros Isle, the importance and significance of it for the Irish, and the importance and the significance of it for the Canadians. I should mention in particular that the people of Quebec, of course, were huge. There were over 400 of these children were orphan children. Both parents had died, and they were adopted by Quebecers. And, of course, it's one of the reasons today why there is a special relationship and warmth between the people of Quebec and the Irish people.
And as you said at the beginning, Ambassador, you know, this is the first time that the Irish government has chosen to celebrate and acknowledge the famine outside of Ireland. The celebrations, of course, are starting today in Skibbereen, and we will be talking to Terry Carney in the second half of the show about the events that are going on there. And I know the minister is due to be in Skibbereen a week from today.
That's right.
So the connectivity between Grosseal and Skibbereen is being established there. And I also need, I should mention that this coming Sunday, because I want to cover this topic for 2 weeks, I will have the former Minister Sheila Copps is going to come on the show, and I will also have Jim Callery from Strokestown House.
Well, I think that's a wonderful idea. Sheila Copps played a magnificent role in the erection of the memorial and in making sure that the island's connection with Ireland was fully respected. So that is a great thing to do. I think it's also significant that the minister chose Canada to be the first overseas location. And as I say, just one figure alone, as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, outside of Ireland, the single biggest burial place for Irish people in terms of numbers, over 5,500, is in this little island in the St. Lawrence Estuary in Canada.
So, when you get over there, then the planned events that are due to happen, because I know it's a quite compressed period of time because of the journey over, and I think the ferry starts to come back at about 3:15, is it, or maybe thereabouts?
Well, that's right. The centerpiece of what we will do, Austin, is we will, of course, visit the cross. And there will be some reflections at the cross. But the centrepiece is that the Irish government has given funding, over $40,000 Canadian, and in conjunction with the government of Canada, there are many buildings on the island, and some of them are referred to as lazarettos, and basically they are places of convalescence. And one of the original lazaretto buildings is still standing. So we have made this contribution, and with Parks Canada, we will refurbish the lazaretto basically as it might have looked in 1847. So there will be the unveiling of a plaque in French, English, and Irish by the minister and by the Canadian minister. That basically will be the centerpiece of the operation on the island today.
Now, the other aspect of Grosseal, of course, is that as I understand, like they were two churches on Grosseal, or there were two separate relief efforts at both ends of the island. The island was separated, first of all, that the healthy were on one section, or the staff, and then the those that arrived were on another section.
That's right. I mean, for obvious reasons, it's such a small island. They knew the disease was very infectious. They didn't know how to cure it. So they basically had an area for people who were very ill. They also had a separate area for people who were recovering. So there is separation on the island. There are two churches on the island. There's a Catholic church and there's also an Anglican church. And one of the projects that's been undertaken as well is that the Irish Protestant Benevolent Society of Montreal is involved in refurbishing the Anglican church on the island. And their representative, their president, Mr. Nelson, will be on the island today and will meet with the minister.
And, of course, that is an important aspect of the whole famine and Grosseal and migration story, is that it was not just the Catholic population of Ireland who were devastated by the famine.
Typhus didn't ask whether you were a Catholic or a Protestant, and death was shall we say, everybody had to suffer the same issues. And that was, of course, the case in Toronto, where there's over 1,000 people buried. So, Austin, we're looking forward to today. I'm getting signals here from Carl Gardner, whom some of the people will know.
Yes.
We have to basically start to move here and gather everybody to get into cars on that. So I'm very grateful, Austin, for the chance to come on the program and to tell the listeners about what I regard is one of the most significant issues in the history of Canada and the history of Ireland.
And, Ambassador, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you have a full day, and I hope the weather holds up and that everything runs according to plan. And I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Gormila Mahagot, Austin. Thank you very much. Bye now.
Gormila Mahagot. And you are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron. And of course, that was Ambassador Declan Kelly talking to us from Quebec City, where he's getting ready to head up towards the ferry to head over to Grosseal.
Hello, this is Sharon Shannon, and you're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM.
As I mentioned, we will be talking with Terry Carney in Skibbereen shortly. And there is a walk that gets underway at 2 o'clock their time, which is 9 o'clock my time, and that is from Carna to Skibbereen, and it's to commemorate the protest walk that took place in 1846. But before that, we started the program with Belfast Andy singing about Grosseal, and before we talk to Terry Carney, this is Sinead O'Connor singing about Skibbereen.
Oh, Father dear, I oftentimes hear you talk of Erin's Isle. Her lofty scenes and valleys green, her mountains rude and wild. They say it is a pretty place wherein a prince might dwell. Oh, why did you abandon it? The reason to me tell. Oh, son, I love my native land with energy and pride, till a blight came over all my crops, my sheep and cattle died. The rent and taxes were so high I could not them redeem, and that's the cruel reason why I left old Skibbereen. Oh, it's well I do remember that bleak December day. The landlord and the sheriff came to drive us all away. They set my roof on fire with their demon yellow spleen, and that's another reason why I left old Skibbereen. Your mother too, God rest her soul, fell on the snowy ground. She fainted in her anguish, seeing the desolation round. She never rose, but passed away from life to mortal dream. She found a quiet grave, my boy, in dear old Skibbereen. And you were only 2 years old, and feeble was your frame. I could not leave you with your friends. You bore your father's name. I wrapped you in my coat, and more in the dead of night unseen. I heaved a sigh and said goodbye to dear old Skibbereen.
And that was Sinead O'Connor with her rendition of Skibbereen Haunting. And certainly I find when I listen to that version, I can pick up on the pain that must have been there. Terry Kearney in Skibbereen, welcome to the Gaelic Hour here in Ottawa.
Thank you very much, Austin, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, and I wanted to bring you on. We were just talking with our ambassador who is down at on his way to Grosseal with Minister Eamon O'Keefe, and of course today marks the beginning of the National Famine Commemoration 2009, and I know Minister Eamon O'Keefe will be with you on a week today, next Sunday. But the festival, or I shouldn't say the festival, the commemoration gets underway today with some events starting, and can you tell me what's starting to happen?
Sure. Sure. Well, the first event of the week really is a sponsored walk from Cora to Skibbereen. And I'm now sitting in a very accommodating family's house in Cora to take this call, so I can join the walk shortly, the cars of Mulligalan. And what we're doing is we're reenacting a walk that happened on the 30th of September 1846 from Cora to Skibbereen. So we're hoping a good crowd will turn up, and the rain is holding off, fortunately enough. So that's taking place here at 2 o'clock local time, which is in about 25 minutes.
So, Terry, where's Cora?
Cora is just north of Skibbereen, and I'm very proud to say it's my mother's parish, because they're very lovely people and accommodating people up here. And it was an area that was particularly badly affected during the famine as well, and it was part of Skibbereen Union. As you know, Austin, or you may not know, the country was divided into unions under the poor law.
Okay.
So Skibbereen Union covered an actual total population of 105,000 all around the surrounding area. And Cora was part of that.
Right. And what happened on the 30th of September to cause the protest march, or what was the instance that surrounded that?
Sure. Well, what the background to it is that first, as you know, when the blight struck in 1845, they actually thought it was only going to be for a year or possibly 2 years, because there'd been quite a few little mini famines before that, 1817 and 1822, both they had years of shortages. And the standard government response was pretty much as it is now, is to create capital works to employ people, to get them over the hump, and to create capital projects also. And what they did is they paid people for hard labour, and they built walls, roads, bridges, sometimes roads to nowhere really. But the conditions were very, very bad, because there was a lot of inefficiencies in how they ran these schemes. And also, they were very badly paid because of the food inflation. And they also changed the system. They were paid a daily rate, and then later on in the famine, they changed it to a task rate. So that obviously was very hard to measure, you know, like a job per item, a payment per item. So there was a lot of anomalies and discrepancies, and literally people were starving while they were working on these road relief works. And on the 30th of September 1846, somewhere between 800 and 1,000 desperate men at this stage, working up here in Cora on the Cora Road Relief Scheme, they had heard that the relief scheme was due to finish, and they hadn't been paid for weeks, and they were on the verge of starvation. And meanwhile, down in Skibbereen, there was a government store full of food. And it's quite complicated to explain why that was, is because Sir Robert Peel had imported food, and he had it in stores all over the countryside. But the idea was that they released this food as the food inflation prices went up. So they were holding the food, essentially, for later on in the winter when food prices went up. Then they'd release the food at a lower price to stabilise prices. Am I making myself clear?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So rather than having the food there and holding it to actually get more money for it, they wanted to be able to, as you say, counterbalance what might be the scarcity that was happening in the normal market. So this helps.
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. But then that led to a situation where you had down in Skibbereen a store full of food, and meanwhile you had people starving, literally. So these men were desperate, and they had nothing to lose. So they started to march down to Skibbereen, which is an 8-mile walk, and I hope to be doing it myself today. And along the way, Dr. Dan Donovan, who was the doctor in Skibbereen at the time, he was riding back into Skib from visiting a patient, and he saw these men, these beragged creatures, as he called them, and he described they carried their picks and their shovels on their shoulders, and the sun was glinting off of them. And he rode into Skibbereen and, you know, alerted the town and said, you know, careful, there's a riot going to happen. And Skibbereen literally shut down. The shops shuttered their doors. They brought children in. And there was 75 military in Skibbereen at the time, and all 75 went up to the end of town where the men would have been approaching town. And there was a newly built school there, which is now St. Faulkner's de la Salle School. And the military went up there and were ready to fire on these men. So the men arrived in, and there was a standoff. And the leader of the military said, you know, stand down or we'll shoot you. And the response from the men was, better be shot than not. And they primed their guns, and it was just about to happen. And we had a fantastic man, the Justice of the Peace, and Mr. Galway at the time, he defused the situation. He said, you know, three cheers for the Queen and we'll get some food out of the store. And the men gave three cheers to the Queen and they went down and they got them some food. And the mood was broken and the spell was broken. But they stayed there for another 4 hours, the men, and they couldn't get them to break up.
Right.
And in the end, they did. But that was the 30th of September, 1846. And on the 17th of October, 1846, a man working on the Cork Relief Road, now we don't know if he was one of those men, but most likely he was, Dennis McKennedy, was one of the first early deaths of the famine. And it was a scandal at the time because they did an inquest on him because he was one of the early deaths, and it had found that he had died of starvation while working on the government scheme. And Trevelyan himself was embarrassed about this. And when they went and investigated it, they'd found that it was an administrative error, and these poor men hadn't been paid because of some mess up by a clerk. And the jury actually wanted, the result of the inquest was the jury wanted to hold the British government responsible for the murder of this man, was the term they used. But in the end, his death was attributed to the gross negligence of the Board of Works. So today we're tracing the steps that those men took, and we're linking the two parishes again and just remembering the event.
Right, right. Now, I know that that's underway today. I also see that St. Faulkner's Silver Band, and you mentioned St. Faulkner's there, that they're participating this evening, and that that band has been playing for 150 years.
That's right, and it's an interesting story behind that one as well. It's not famine-related. We had a man from Skibbereen, Gerard McCorra, who was an inventor. And he worked in the Edison laboratories, and he worked in several other, he worked with Marconi. But he invented a machine called the Pulsicon, which was a vibrating massage machine. But he made his money from that, and he came back to live in Skibbereen, and he founded the St. Faulkner Silver Band and bought them beautiful silver instruments, which are still used today, and brought in a special band leader to teach them how to play properly. And the same band is going all these years later. And the whole idea of this week, Austin, is that we're trying to get everybody in Skibbereen to participate. So you can say that nearly every organization is involved, and we couldn't do that without the band.
Now, when you said this week, and let's talk about the week, because today is the commemoration gets underway today. What else is planned, and how's the week going to shape up?
Well, we have a huge variety of events. So that's this evening, St. Faulkner Silver Band, and then we have an author, William Henry, giving a talk on coffin ships after that. He's just in a book on a coffin ship. So he's giving a talk this evening at the Heritage Centre. Tomorrow is the first of three, well, possibly more, because there's been such a demand, we may have to put on extra ones. Skibbereen Famine Walks. We're going to give guided walks around Skibbereen Town because a lot of the buildings are still standing, Austin. And people can see and touch the buildings, and the guides will bring them around and explain what happened. So the first one of those is tomorrow, as is the first of the theatrical events. And the local theatre society has really, really, really gone the whole hog with this. First of all, they're producing this short little pageant tomorrow evening. It's The Boldest Fenian Man. It's based on the life and times of Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa, who lived in Skibbereen through the famine. And if you've ever read the book Rossa's Recollections, he had suffered some bitter experiences in Skibbereen, and they say that it went on to forge steel in the man.
Right.
But the pageant is going on in the courtyard in the centre, and it's very, very powerful, short little pageant, 25 minutes. And after that, then, the West Cork Arts Centre is bringing art historian Catherine Marshall to speak about art during the famine and the lack of art on the famine, which really is the lack of illustrations and images, which is quite unusual for such a huge impact on society that it had. If you look at it, there's very, very little visual art on the subject other than the iconic O'Mahony illustrations of the period. And on Tuesday evening, will I continue
on?
Yeah,
you can. Go on to Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday evening,
we're very proud to have the local Gaelscoil giving their pageant Os Gaelge in the courtyard. It's called Class Mick Garalt, and they've already won an award on this, and they were out in the courtyard rehearsing the other evening. There was a lot of little dead bodies on the courtyard. It was quite sad to see. But there's some very, very young children involved in it, and we're delighted to have something Os Gaelge as well. And straight following that, we have a talk on the life and times of Reverend Richard Boyle Townsend, who was vicar in Skibbereen through the time of the famine, and very, very important man because he agitated for relief to Skibbereen. He went and visited Trevelyan in London and called for help for Skibbereen and the area, and he really went out of his way to try and help the town, and unfortunately he died himself of typhus fever during the famine. So there's a talk on his life and times, and then straight following that in Abbey Sturry Church, the choir is singing in his honour, so that's quite a nice evening there and a nice way of remembering the man as well.
Now, Terry, you mentioned there that when you were talking about doing the walks, that the demand was such that you were having to put on extra. What type of interest are you gauging and inquiries have you been receiving? And given that the walk is about to take place in about 15 minutes, what type are people coming from the surrounding areas? Are you getting people in from Bantry and as far as Bandon and Dunmanway or Clonakilty?
I'd expect so often. I'm afraid we won't know. The only things that are booking only are the famine walks and the plays, and there's been a huge response to those. But everything else is a turn-up job. And judging by the amount of calls and the amount of emails we've been getting, I think we should get a good response. But the week will, as the week unfolds, we'll know that. But certainly we've been getting a huge amount of calls to say we're really glad that this is happening. And similarly, when it was announced first that Skibbereen was to be the first, the host town, the calls that I got from all different organisations, from the rowing club to the GAA to individuals, people just ringing up saying, what can I do, was phenomenal. So it does show that there's a strong feeling for the famine, Austin, still there, you know.
And what has the media reaction been?
The media, the last week now, we've had quite a bit of interest. All right, the local radio was on Friday. We're nationwide, the RTE programme is coming down on Wednesday to film, and of course I'm on your radio station, which I'm very proud to be. So yes, there will be, as the week goes on, particularly for the national commemoration, we're expecting there's a lot of international stations coming. Turkish TV is coming, for example.
Okay.
So it will be covered. It'll be going out to a lot of countries.
And of course the national commemoration is on a week today.
That's right, Sunday the 17th. But
that's kind of the pinnacle of the week, I would take it, in that everything else is leading up towards that.
It is indeed. And the way we looked at it as well is that fantastic that day is going to be going on, but, you know, not everybody may be able to participate in it, so, or, you know, make that particular day. Whereas by running a week of it, we gave everybody an opportunity to have full participation and to take part in some event. And like I say, there's been a huge response from people, and I think that they do appreciate that. And a lot of people actually wanted to give performances and talks themselves. So by running it for the week, we were able to facilitate that.
Now, as I look down through the list and I can see some of the participants, I'm going to move you forward to Saturday because I see you have Professor Mark McGowan coming over to do an introduction to Grosseal, the quarantine station. And of course, when we were talking with Ambassador Kelly, we talked about the movie Death or Canada, which Professor McGowan was very deeply involved in. So
yes, I'm very, very pleased to have Mark coming over, and I'm really looking forward to meeting the man. He did visit the Heritage Centre last summer and left his card. Unfortunately, I wasn't there the day he visited. But he left the fatal words on the reverse of his card: if ever I can do anything to help you, please give me a call. And then, of course, when this was announced, he was called. But he has been so accommodating and so pleasant to deal with by email. He also participated, what I should say actually is one first thing that happened this morning is there is a radio program here, an RTE radio program, Sunday Miscellany, where it's, you know, essays by various different people on different topics. And this morning's entire program was between Skibbereen and Canadian participants. And Mark spoke about Canada and the priest who did such good work there. And I have to say that there were tears in my eyes this morning, even listening to him on the radio. So I'm really looking forward to hearing his talk on Friday. And he's giving us a talk on the Canada-Munster connection. And then on Saturday evening, he's introducing the Flight to Groseal play, which is the one that the local drama, the second performance that the local drama group are doing. And what we're also getting from Groseal from today's ceremony is that they're kindly taking photographs and they're going to send them over to us as a PowerPoint presentation. So before every Flight to Groseal performance this week, there's three, it's on a Wednesday night, Saturday night and Sunday night, we're going to be playing, or I don't know what the proper term is, broadcasting or imaging those images up on the curtain before the performance starts and at the intervals. So everybody in Skibbereen will see what's happening in Groseal today and know what Groseal is all about.
Now, I'm going to land something on you, and I don't know if you don't know, just tell me. But I noticed that this Flight to Groseal presents Jim Minogue's award-winning play. I wasn't aware of who's, like, this, the play itself. Is Jim Minogue going to, is he going to be around? And
he is, actually, yes. He's coming on the Saturday night. We've been told he's coming down just to see the performance on the Saturday night. And we've had some interesting people booking, actually, for the performance on Saturday night, including the Malaysian ambassador and a couple of other ambassadors. So it should be a good show. But he himself is turning up on Saturday night to see this. So he's delighted, apparently, that the play has been chosen to be part of this national commemoration. And there's a cast of 30, Austin.
Right.
In a small town, to pull together 30 thespians is some achievement, so congratulations to Skibbereen Theatre Society.
I'll introduce a slight bit of levity here, but I would have understood that everybody in Skibbereen was a good actor.
Yeah. You've been talking to people, haven't you?
Oh, I know your neck of the woods too well.
We have a bit of the blast, all right.
Indeed you do. So on the 17th, as we said, the National Commemoration Day happens, and Minister O'Keefe, who's down at Groseal today, will be back over with you. And that is the culmination of the week.
That's right. That's right. And it's going to be a very special day, hopefully. It's happening in two parts, Austin.
Right.
The first part, it's done really with health and safety in mind, but also with a view to the fact that there might be older people who might be able to participate in the second part of the commemoration. So they've done this to facilitate people. So the first part of it, the programme will open on the Sunday morning at O'Donovan Ross Park, which is just opposite the Heritage Centre, and there's going to be several different ceremonies there. The Army Band is going to be playing, then Minister O'Keefe is going to arrive, and there's going to be a tree planting, and there's going to be readings, and then a representative of each of the schools, a child from each of the schools, will light a candle. And like I say, readings in Irish and in English. And then Minister O'Keefe will then lead a solemn walk from O'Donovan Rossa Park out to Abbeystrury Cemetery, where the mass graves are, where the second part of the ceremony will take place.
Okay.
And again, we're hoping that that'll be, that would have been the road that most people would have been taken out there to be buried. So people are going to have those who died during the famine in their mind when we're walking out there, is the idea.
Yeah.
And when we arrive at the ceremony, there's going to be some reeds laid on the mass grave. The mass grave there has been very well taken care of by the local famine committee, and they've done an awful lot of work on it now in the run-up to this. And it's all about respect, really, Austin. You know, it's somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 people buried there. And I think the idea is they weren't granted much respect in life, so it is good to be able to give them this opportunity to have some respect for them in death. There's going to be reeds laid by Minister O'Keefe and the ambassadors and some of the local representatives. And again, there's an interdenominational service there, and that's where the full state protocol and the commemoration will finish there, and there'll just be a small reception back at the Heritage Centre afterwards.
Fantastic. Terry, I'm going to let you get yourself organised to get over to the walk. The website is www.skibheritage.com. That's SKIBB heritage.com. Terry Carney in getting ready to go and do your commemorative walk. Thanks a million for coming on the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM on this Sunday.
And thanks very much for having a representative Skibbereen talk, Austin.
Oh, you're welcome, and have a wonderful commemoration for the full week down there, and I'm sure
thanks,
everything will run. Take
maybe
care.
Those in Canada will say a prayer for us and say a prayer for the people that died during the time.
I'm sure. Take care, Terry. Thanks a million.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Austin.
Bye-bye.